today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, who's the most famous person from Toledo?
Well, let me give you some clues. He's smart. He's super cool. He's dashingly handsome. Really, he's just about the best person you will ever meet.
Oh, yeah, Jamie Farr.
All right, Patrick, you enjoying this interview that I did?
I loved it, Jim. Yeah, it was just so fun. And like you said, I think, you know, for music fans like us, you may know somebody like that who played around in your hometown. And you know, it's interesting. I was thinking, too, that cover bands now have sort of changed. I mean, there are not too many places where you go on the weekend to, you know, the corner bar and you hear a band play a bunch of very different covers. Now you have to be in a tribute band and you have to do like a whole show and, you know, we have to get a clever name and you know, I'm sure there are some places like that, but it just doesn't seem, at least around here, maybe.
Yeah,
anyway,
I don't know.
They're not as, that's kind of a dying art, is just that eclectic, like, oh, I know the sound of today or something like that. It seems like it has to be packaged up as a 70s show or like, you know,
I think you're right.
Or like an era, you know, or something like that. Well, it's different.
Stephen was saying that it's much harder these days to make a living.
It seems like
doing
it,
that.
Yeah.
Because the clubs just don't want to pay
right
anymore.
Right.
And then the wedding thing has largely dried up because DJs have pretty much taken over.
That's
that.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's tougher. You're right. So you're going to have kind of have to have a gimmick, I guess.
Yeah.
To draw people out and make it get bookings. I don't know.
Yeah, and the streaming platforms have, you know, broken everything into specific genres now. So people that like whatever top 40 is these days certainly wouldn't like other, you know, songs. There's no one set of top 40 songs. But I digress.
So today we're going to talk a little bit more with Stephen J. I went out to his house in Toledo.
Can't wait.
And it was a lot of fun. And this time we talk about that, what it takes to be a great successful wedding band, and then also, you know, some other of his more eclectic side projects, the stuff where he knew, you know, where it wasn't necessarily going to make much money, but he had to do it because he's
right.
A creative person, and
right.
He had to get that out.
Yep,
right,
exactly.
So there's some good stuff here, and so again, indulge me, this was a lot of fun for me. I had a great time, and you know, just hanging with somebody, a cool guy talking about music, what's wrong with that, right?
Nothing at all.
All right.
Nothing at all.
Okay, so this show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we're going to press play here on part two of the interview with Stephen J. Athens. What does it take to be a great wedding band?
Flexibility in your music. We usually always had to learn a song that wasn't normally in our repertoire. And it was big. The big ones were like Sinatra's The Way You Look Tonight. We had to learn a Paul Simon song once about that he wrote about his daughter on one of his later solo LPs.
Okay.
So there, you had to be flexible, and you know, sometimes to get that money, which, by the way, was known in the Toledo area as homewrecker money, was the money that the high money that we were demanding and getting.
Okay,
that was what other bands strove to get, and they called it, we want the homewrecker money. And there was, you know, it was an 8-piece band, and there were a couple months where each member was taking home $1,800 a week.
Wow.
I mean, we're playing
each member. Wow.
Yeah. For 8 people.
Yeah.
And but you know, we were playing a few gigs, sometimes even two a day, doing a rally and then going to the Ottawa Tavern that night and stuff like that. But it was good stuff.
That was what I was going to ask, is can you make a living off of being in a cover band? And it sounds like you could for a while.
For a while.
Yeah.
For a while. It's part of the reason why I hung up my rock and roll shoes and turned to a visual arts, because they stopped paying. And it got to the point where, you know, a club will not pay. And as far as I know, it's still like this. The majority of clubs will not pay more than $50 a member. And, you know, you rent a PA, you rehearse, you lug the equipment in, you lug it out at 2:30 at night. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. So I that was where I ended.
But the weddings can be a pretty lucrative gig,
you're a fool,
right?
if they're not. I mean, those people expect to pay high dollar for a band. The problem is that these days, 9 times out of 10, or probably 9.75 times out of 10, they're going with DJs now, which, I'm sorry, it sucks.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that energy.
Right. Right.
All right, it's time to do the chicken dance.
Right. So when you were at sort of the height of the Homewreckers and, you know, playing a few times a week and making good money, how did that experience compare to the fun experience of, you know, being on the road from Toledo to Pensacola and back? Like, compare and contrast that for me.
It was different. There was more of a responsibility, which is not a word that usually you use in rock and roll, but you had to be willing to do especially like I said, in weddings, to be flexible with your playlist. But it just, we had to be a little more, less loopy, which still, I jumped around and like I said, I wasn't a really great singer, so I made up for it by being a fool on stage. And the thing with the Homewreckers, the way we worked around that was, for a while we were called the world's only karaoke band, because I would bring people up, much to the pissed offedness of the other band members. You know, when you got eight people up there, and then I'd choose to bring up, you know, six more people who want to sing Take Me to the River or something like that. It's kind of a crowded stage, but, you know, I integrate using the audience,
yeah,
you know.
Of course, yeah. It's fun. It's an experience. People remember that. Yeah.
I kept my vocal cords.
So how many songs did you guys know? Like
the Homewreckers?
Yeah.
Probably 100, 150.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, it was, there was constant turnover, but there were constant songs that people definitely wanted to hear. Brown Eyed Girl.
Right.
I swear to God, Jim, I don't think Van plays that anymore in his live shows. I think I've done it more than he has. So there was that. There was I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. Couldn't get away a night without doing that. For a while, it was Build Me Up Buttercup.
Yeah.
The Foundations. Good songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, you run that stuff into the ground.
Right.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah. What did you guys have that made it work so well?
I think it was a maturity that maybe the other bands didn't have previously, which just came naturally with getting older. I think possibly the market opening up more to rock and roll, the acceptance of that Blues Brothers-ish kind of music, which I guess we wore that for a while, because we all wore the shiny suits and we all shopped at Jack's Menswear over on Door Street, and it was a lot of fun. And I think the level of musicianship, I mean, that was one thing. Whenever I tried to escape this town, and I went to New York City, I lived in Ann Arbor for a while, and went down to Cincinnati, I always had to start from square one as far as starting a band. Whereas here, I had a reputation, so I could get the cream of the crop musicians. And so I think that played a lot into our longevity also.
And it must have just been very satisfying and fun to know that you're making good money
doing this. I mean, you're not working at the Jeep plant.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. And it was short-lived, but take it while you can, right? You know, quit my day job for a year or so.
Right.
More power to me. Yeah.
Now, in any of these special requests at the weddings, did anyone request jack you off?
No.
Okay.
That's only you got that one.
That's only the high school kids who want to do that. Okay. Even through the whole run of the Homewreckers,
yeah,
which you mentioned was around 30 years or so, right?
Close to.
You still were playing in other bands, right?
Well, for a while, but then the demands of the Homewreckers, because we got more popular,
okay,
I left the other things behind. However, I would, I did do a couple studio things that were of my stuff, which, you know, I couldn't write blues music or stuff like that. I was in a little niche of my own, so.
Okay. Because, yeah, I noticed, you know, some of the stuff that you sent me and some of the things I found were, like, what is the Coosters? What is that?
The Coosters was a short-lived band because of the money, and it was eclectic.
Oh, how well I do remember the misery of a cold November, a month of chill and gray and dread. I will choose to stay in bed. Let the world roll in its slime. I'd rather pick a warmer clime where the rest of the world will never tread. You'll find me in my cozy bed. Pull the blankies way up tight. I don't care if it's day or night. And once again, hear what I've said. I'm staying in my comfy bed. I've always found when in duress, I do my best on a firm mattress. I'll find a book that I've not read.
It was a very eclectic band. We had a mandolin player. We had a bass player who played upright, played the regular bass, mm-hmm, and also played didgeridoo on one song, because you don't play more than one note on a didgeridoo. So we found a song that was a drone, which was Yardbirds. Hey, over, under, sideways, down. So he would just drone the didgeridoo. Then we had a guitar player, and I played guitar, and a percussionist. And he didn't use a traditional set. He would stand up. So we did all kinds of weird stuff. Also, we did stuff like the tattoo Groucho Marx, Lydia the tattooed lady.
Yeah. Okay.
We did stuff like that. And as a matter of fact, we were playing at a club one night and downtown, and a small club, and we're doing Lydia the tattooed lady, and the owner of the club comes up while I'm singing the song and goes to my ear and says, "Can't you guys play any Beatles?" And yeah, we played Beatles, but Jesus, come on, man.
Right.
Over their head.
Yep.
So the Coosters was short-lived and eclectic. We put out an EP of eight songs, eight of my original stuff, which is probably one of my favorite stuff. It was because it was acoustic, and I was writing some good stuff then.
Allowed you to maybe stretch some different muscles.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of thing, right? Yeah.
As it was, that one of the Coosters songs. That's a really nice song.
Thank you.
It's a really nice song. I really enjoyed that today. So.
It's the guy who produced my We Are Our Own Parade CD. That it struck a nerve with him too. So it's good to know.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, thank you.
I wish I had a real fast sled and a long, steep, snowy hill. I would climb up to the top and get ready for the thrill. Zip my coat up, straighten my cap, then I'd sit and plant my feet. Nudge it forward till it hit the slope, till it's too late to retreat. And as I went down, I toppled all my problems, and I giggle just to see them fall. But there's no snow and there's no sled. All is as it was.
Okay, so let's get into that. You have just the one solo record?
Three.
Oh, okay. I'm
three
sorry.
And so, some cassettes.
So Stephen J.
Yeah.
You go by.
Yeah.
What did those allow you to
to get out, I guess.
Different things.
Yeah.
The first one I did came after a really bad divorce. And I just took it out of my guitar and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy named Ed Wells, E.J. Wells, had a studio in Waterville, Happy Land Studios. And we were kind of hanging together. And he said, well, come on in. I'll cut you some slack on studio price and we'll do it. So the CD was basically just woe is me. And when I took it in to Pat O'Connor at Culture Clash, he says, nobody wants to hear this sad, sappy shit. People are looking for anthems right now. And so he kind of shrugged it off. So. But, I, you know, there's some good stuff on it. Skip Away, did I send that to you?
Yeah, that's nice.
Jumping the river, it is deep. I crawled into a hollow log and I promptly fell asleep. And the reason I am out here has all but lost her heart. It don't matter how the river runs when your life's been torn apart. Skip away, skip away, skip away like a stone on a river. Skip away.
That was the first CD.
Okay.
Then the Coosters. We did that one. It was called Worn Out Libertines, which was the actual definition. I found an old dictionary of words not used anymore, and Cooster is a worn out libertine.
Okay.
That was the name of the CD. And then more recently, it's been a couple summers, a guy I was playing in a band with got access to a studio, and he said, well, we can do some free stuff in here. So we did a EP of about six songs. We called it Yo Banana Boy, which is a palindrome, which means says the same forward as backwards. And we did, I think it was six songs that I'd predominantly written in the 80s when I was with the Wet Shavers. I mean, we performed live as the Wet Shavers, but we never recorded them. So playing a little catch up.
Got it. And then, let's see, there was another band I found called Chinese Purple.
Oh, damn, you did your homework.
So what is that one?
Chinese Purple was with my brother, and we had a guy who played pedal steel and dobro, and a guy who played a keyboard and an upright bass, and I played a little acoustic guitar. It was eclectic stuff, and we did a lot of originals. Right. And there's a video of Chinese Purple. We submitted something to Tiny Desk.
Oh, you did?
Didn't win, but there's a video on YouTube. It's a song I wrote called When the Cold Winds Blow.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Cool.
The cold winds blow, the cold winds blow, the cold winds blow, the cold winds blow, the cold winds blow. The cold winds
Because it sounds like you have played in bands with really some different styles of music.
How have you found your own musical interests evolve over time?
I've become sort of a music snob. For a while, when you're in the business and you're playing in bands, you're barraged with music, or you can be. You can shut it out. I mean, I guess Ray Davies says he never listens to anybody else's music but his.
Is that right?
I don't know if I believe that or not. So I was just constantly sticking things in my ear, and you know, we had School Kids Records up in Ann Arbor, a great record store, and they had every genre and just, it was wonderful. So I was just constantly listening to stuff, and I still do. I've gotten pretty off the wall, right? Stuff I'm listening. I'm listening to experimental classical, a lot of Baroque, but I still throw some Beefheart in there every once in a while. And I don't know. My playlist is pretty everywhere.
Yeah.
I can't listen to opera, and I find that a fault, maybe. I do not find it a fault that I can't listen to the current country music.
No. But this leads me to a question. Did you work as a country DJ for a while?
I did, Jim. Why you got to bring that?
the thing I thought was really cool was in the little interview I read, you really tried to talk up the fact that you were doing like an all request show with like classic country,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right?
I was trying to play Hank Williams and Jim Reeves and that, you know, George Jones.
Right.
But the station wanted me to stick with the current format. So the show was short-lived, though. I think we had a riot doing it. We got lots of phone calls. So, and it was when you could access anything online. So if somebody called up and said, I want to hear George Jones, no problem. We Googled it and could play it right like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
which is, I guess.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way the DJs do it now, too.
Are there still DJs anymore?
I mean, the wedding DJs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So what are you doing today? Are you still playing at all? Not so much, right?
No.
You're more into visual arts now.
Yeah, I'm. I got up on stage a couple times in the last year just for friends, and I don't miss it. I don't know. I guess I ran my limit. I mean, I had a riot, and I got great stories and all that, but I just don't want to say it's age either, because I'm still a pain in the ass, but. But I try and do that in my visual art now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're mentioning a piece that you showed me that you're working on right now. And do you want to talk about that at all? Because I think the listeners would get a kick out of what you're doing.
I was in the eighth grade with my first band, Jello. And the bass player, Walt Churchill, brought home Lick My Decals Off, Baby by Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. And I got to say, you know, at the time, I didn't get it. Although I did like the title track and I liked I Love You, Big Dummy. But then I don't know what was going on, but I just started listening to different stuff of his. And the latter stuff, Doc at the Radar Station and Bat Chain Puller, those two LPs, I think they're different LPs. But that era of Beefheart, when he kind of kowtowed to the public, it wasn't Trout Mask Replica, which I wasn't until probably about 5 years ago that I said, yeah, I like this. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
Which opened the door to like Sun Ra and, you know, Coltrane and a bunch of different stuff, really eclectic, off the wall stuff. So I became pretty enamored with the old captain, and I decided I was living in Florida at the time, not playing music, but teaching art down there to an elementary level. And we had a great space that I'd converted to a studio. And so I made a mobile in tribute to Captain Beefheart, a.k.a. Don Van Vliet. And it just struck me that any fool could see that the captain's songs, especially some of the titles, were just so visual, so physically visual, that I put them, I made them.
Yeah.
So he got run, paint, run, run. So I took a paint, tube of paint, stuck arms and legs, and he's jogging. I got ashtray heart, which is the obvious, you know, heart-shaped ashtray. what else? My house is my only home unless it rains. That one's depicted in cardboard cutout, sundown, and there's a couple other.
Yeah.
So it's a huge mobile. It's probably 7 feet across, and it's a bear to hang. it hasn't seen a whole lot of galleries, but I'm trying to revamp it now to make it easier.
Okay, I see.
Maybe it's to deconstruct it so I can just hook it together when I get there. So the music has never really left me. Yeah.
Right, of course.
It's still there.
Okay, one last thing here. You mentioned a couple of times that over the course of this musical journey you've been on, that you've mm-hmm. acquired a lot of great stories.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting down at, you know, a cookout or something like that with a bunch of friends, and they're like, hey, tell us a great story about your times and your adventures in music. What would be a great story you would tell?
There's the Jerry Lee Lewis story.
Right, we got that one.
We got that one. When the Raisins were on the road, Lord have mercy, when we got down south and were introduced to Rebel Yell, the bourbon, not the Billy Idol song.
Yeah.
When we were down south, we had a sound engineer and a light man, and they helped with loading, obviously, the equipment, stuff like that. One night, we had a night off, and we were in a hotel, and we're just sitting drinking in the hotel, and they took off, the sound and the light guy, and they came back. And it was under the influence of Rebel Yell. They came back and they came in the room and they had a stoplight, a three
mm-hmm.
red, yellow, green stoplight that they had somehow freed from some street corner. It just cracked us up. And so, you know, stuff like that.
That's an effort.
Yeah.
That sounds just like a stop sign.
Or no, exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Everybody's got one of those hanging in the garage, right? Yeah,
that's right. All right. Well, thanks very much, Stephen.
Thank you, man.
Athanas?
Athanas. You had it right, man.
Very good. Thanks very much for being on Rock in the Suburbs.
Thank you,
Jim. This has been a delight.
So. It has. Right. For me, too. Thank you. Arrivederci.
Okay, that was really fun. As I mentioned, I had a great time. I'm really happy that
really was fun
that I thought of this and did this.
Yeah, me too. More like that. I liked it a lot. It was really pressed all the buttons. I love the line. I think I've played Brown Eyed Girl more than Van Morrison has. That's great.
Oh yeah, you know that's what you got to do.
Oh,
right?
You do. Yeah, that's got to be a challenging part of it. It's like, oh my God, I got to sing this song again.
There are certain songs like that. Actually, I would count Brown Eyed Girl as one of them that, you know intellectually are great songs.
Yep.
Like, but like, I can't even really listen to that song anymore.
Me neither. You know, there's no way.
Some of those that have just been so overplayed that they're worn out.
Yeah.
Even to me as a listener.
That's right. And I'm sure it's one thing as a DJ to take that request and go, oh, all right, I'll play it. And you can kind of turn your mind off for 3 minutes. But when you're performing it, you certainly can't do that.
No, you got to give it all.
Put your heart and soul in it.
That's right. Well, I hope people enjoyed the music clips on these episodes because he supplied me with a bunch of stuff.
That's great.
That we could use. And so a lot of it would be hard to find. And I don't know. I know you can find this on Discogs, but I have this one record in my collection called Breaking Glass that came out a few years ago. It was really interesting because it's, I think, three different Toledo bands from back in the 80s, and it was put together on this record. And it's called Breaking Glass because Toledo is the glass city, if people didn't know that already.
Of course.
You know, part of American vernacular. But it was really cool because it was a Record Store Day release put out just for like one store. Like
I remember you showed me that. Yeah.
This guy who runs a store, or he did, sadly he passed away, rest in power.
Rest in power.
Pat O'Connor, but he
has a store called Culture Clash. Previously, he had a store that I used to go to when I was a kid called Boogie Records.
Nice.
But he had the store called Culture Clash, and 1 year for Record Store Day, like they put out their own special release,
that's
like
awesome.
Exclusive to that store. Yeah, you didn't find awesome. It on any of the like Record Store Day lists or any of that kind of stuff, because it was just like his project. Yeah, isn't that really cool?
That's the way we should start doing Record Store Day. Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll put out a Suburbs Pod thing next year for Record Store Day. It'd be great.
We've been talking about trying to do some kind of split single or
It'd
something, right?
Yep.
So we'll talk about that.
Okay.
We'll figure it out. All right. So there you go. We got more stuff the rest of the week. Something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. And I'll be getting in touch with Stephen Jay to pre-order some Christmas gifts, Captain Beefheart Mobiles,
yes,
which I am excited about.
Oh, this thing is massive.
Oh, is it huge? Okay, yeah. I need the mini version.
Yeah, that's right.
Desktop version.
Or maybe like maybe you could start making little Christmas ornaments or something like that out of the
better.
Different
oh, I
sort
love
of
that.
Pieces, right?
Yes. Captain Beefheart Christmas ornaments would be good.
Okay. All right, I thought you would like that.
Yes.
So, all right, here we go. If you would like to correspond with our show, and maybe you have some connection to some of the stuff we've been talking about, you can email rock@suburbspod.com, or you can call
612-440-1984.
Yep. There you go. Or find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
All is as it was.
Jeez, Nell Dean, give me a break.
Yeah.